We are the winners.
We are, we are.
We are the winners.
We are, we are.
We are the winners of Eurovision.
Welcome to the Wind Machine Podcast, not your average Eurovision podcast. My name's Danny Tregoning, and today I'm joined by the Did See Coolilai to my Salty Bashai, Mark Perkins.
Good evening, Danny. Good evening, listeners.
Good evening, Europe. Yeah, I'm not going to say those words again because, yeah, as we always do, we've stuffed up already. Your potato dumplings.
Cool, I like them, yeah.
And I am cold beetroot soup.
I've never had that. I'm wondering how it would taste.
I'm not a fan of cold soup anyway.
No?
No.
No, no, I suppose I'm not really either.
No, no. This is our last country. I can't believe it.
We have gone through how many countries? Oh, 46 countries
46
now?
46 countries. No.
No.
Got to include the three from the Odds and Sods episode.
Dear.
Go on, do maths. Quick.
Quick. There's no time. This is 46 plus 2, 48 countries.
Far out. And just think that we haven't even touched on Morocco.
Luxembourg.
Yeah. The ones that no longer participate.
Yeah.
How weird. Maybe one day.
Maybe one day. But
maybe one
whoa.
Day. I know. And of course, our intro. How could you go past LT United from 2006? Seriously, the boos from the crowd were enough for us.
Yeah, gee. They really thought they were going to win, didn't they?
They did. So they came sixth on 192 points and started a new revolution of bad dancing.
Oh, that bald guy. Oh, mate, he's my hero. Oh.
Unbelievable. So our last country out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom is Lithuania, and we're focusing on our favourites based on a jury of two. We have...
Please pause for this kiss.
Love and Pain Shoes.
That was us yesterday.
Mm.
Get up and dance in really short shorts.
Lithuania's answer to Alanis Morissette sings about getting old.
And the song we have all been waiting for. So... Let's begin.
The Republic of Lithuania is a country in the Baltic region of northeastern Europe. Since its independence, Lithuania has been referred to as one of the Baltic states. It is situated along the southeastern shore of the Baltic Sea, to the east of Sweden and Denmark. It is bordered by Latvia to the north, Belarus to the east and south, Poland to the south, and the Kaliningrad Oblast, which I love.
I know you love that place, yeah.
Which is a Russian enclave to the southwest. Lithuania has an estimated population of 2.8 million people as of 2017, and its capital and largest city is Vilnius. Almost sounds like a cartoon character, doesn't it?
I'm Vilnius.
Lithuania is a member of the European Union, the Council of Europe, and a full member of the Eurozone, Schengen Agreement, and NATO. It is also a member of the Nordic Investment Bank and part of the Nordic-Baltic Cooperation of Northern European countries. The United Nations Human Development Index lists Lithuania as of very high human development.
That is an accolade to be worthy and proud of.
I think so.
The flag of Lithuania consists of a horizontal tricolour of yellow, green and red. And a few weeks back, I couldn't recognise it for the life of me.
Yeah, I know. And Fleur was testing us, wasn't she?
Yes, and she's having a snicker right now. The flag was adopted on the 25th of April 1918 during Lithuania's first period of independence from 1918 to 1940, which ceased with the occupation first by Soviet Russia and Lithuania's illegal annexation into the Soviet Union and then by Nazi Germany between 41 and 44. During the post-World War II Soviet occupation from 45 to 1989, the Soviet-Lithuanian flag consisted first of a generic red Soviet flag with the name of the Republic, then changed to the red flag with white and green bars at the bottom. The original flag was then re-adopted on the 20th of March 1989, almost a year before the re-establishment of Lithuania's independence, and almost 3 years before the collapse of the Soviet Union. The yellow in the flag is meant to symbolise the sun and prosperity, the green is for the forests, the countryside, liberty and hope, and the red represents the blood and bravery of those who have died for Lithuania.
The Lithuanian language is the official state language of Lithuania and is recognised as one of the official languages of the European Union. There are about 2.96 million native Lithuanian speakers in Lithuania and about 0.2 million abroad. Lithuanian is a Baltic language closely related to Latvian, although they are not mutually intelligible. It is written in an adapted version of the Roman script. Lithuanian is believed to be the linguistically most conservative living Indo-European tongue, retaining many features of the Proto-Indo-European. The Soviet era had imposed the official use of Russian, so most adult Lithuanians speak Russian as a second language, while the Polish population generally speaks Polish. Russians who immigrated after World War II, of course, speak Russian as their first language. The younger generation usually speak English as their second language, while a substantial portion of the total population, at least 37%, speak two foreign languages. According to a census in 2011, 30% of the population can speak English. Lithuanian Sign Language and Russian Sign Language are used by the deaf community. This is our last top five for a country. We should have like a moment of silence, not from Romania, but, you know, we should have like a moment of silence to sort of, we made it all the way through. I think we've picked some absolute top songs.
Yeah, honestly, I think it's actually a cause for celebration. Our first song up is from 2015, and it's called This Time by Vidas Barmila, and quite possibly my favourite female artist of Eurovision for all time, Monika Linkaitė.
This time, I think I'm falling in love. This time, you're some from heaven above. Whoa. My God, stop for a minute and think, how about we just go out for a drink? Whoa. 'Cause every time I close my eyes, I feel you near. I'm feeling
what you missed.
Monika Linkaitė, born 1992, is a Lithuanian singer and songwriter. She has previously attempted to represent Lithuania in the Eurovision Song Contest in 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, and in the Junior Eurovision Song Contest in 2007. Please come back for 2019. I'd much appreciate it. She studied public health at uni, but left after three semesters. In 2014, she began studying law, but in 2016 left to study music education at the British and Irish Modern Music Institute in London. Vidas Jacob Baumilia, born 1987, is a Lithuanian singer and actor. He became known after finishing third in TV3 music reality show Dangus. In 2014, he reached the final of Lithuanian Eurovision selection, where he ended up on third place. The song came 18th in the final on only 30 points.
Dang.
Dang.
We thought we'd start with something, a bit of a bop, really.
Yeah.
It's a great song, this one. The official clip is really cute.
It is.
It's pretty much people listening to the song while Monika and Vidas sing in another room. So we've got them in colour and we've got the people listening in black and white. We've all got different couples, which is lovely. We've even got a bit of a threesome happening.
Yes.
That was quite cute. I like that. And of course, there's lots of kissing.
Yes.
There is a lot of kissing, but it's very cute. The thing is, these two have such good chemistry, I just assume they were together. They're not.
They're not, no.
No, very strange. On the Eurovision stage, we've got Monika starting in this really lovely dress. Like, I can't even explain it. It almost looks like it's sort of made of almost feathers.
Hmm.
And it sort of starts dark blue and then goes into white, which is very cute.
It harkens back to Johanna from Iceland.
It does a little bit. She doesn't look as much of a toilet doily as Johanna did, but very cute. And there's sort of like a sun background.
Yes, yeah, very shiny, sunny, yeah.
Very, you know, kaleidoscopic.
Yeah, that's probably
does
closer.
That sound good?
Yeah.
I'm surprised I actually said that without my teeth falling out. Then, of course, Vidas arrives and we've got four backup singers. Then, of course, there's the big kiss where everybody kisses. So you've got the two backup singers. So you've got the two male backup singers and the two female backup singers giving each other a bit of a smooch. And, of course, Monika and Vidas. And they go a little bit too long.
Yeah, oopsie.
I think they enjoyed it a little too much.
They kind of missed the line after the
kiss. Yeah, oops. But that was fine. You know, they still performed really well at the final, so it wasn't that bad. There's a lot of good-looking people in Lithuania. Let's just talk about this for a moment, because Monika's quite cute.
Is it hot in here?
It is. No, it is actually hot in here. It's a very spring day, and, of course, the booth being as it is always a bit warm.
Just a little bit extra hot right now.
Yeah. See, this next song is sung by a guy who I think is a bit cute. He's very young. Well, he's not very young, but he's younger than us, so I feel a bit dirty looking at him. But I still think he's a bit of a looker. Here's something by Andreas Pulavis from 2013.
I have to tell you something. It's been on my mind so long. I've got to tell you this. It's been on my mind way too long. I promised myself to tell. Instead I'm falling apart to see you here. If you don't know, I'm in love with you. When summertime falls, it becomes untrue because of the shoes I'm wearing today. One is gone.
Andreas Polovis, born 1983, is a Lithuanian singer and songwriter. He began singing at a young age, and during high school he played in a band called No Hero. After graduating from high school, he moved to Vilnius, where he graduated with history studies at the Lithuanian University of Educational Sciences and played in a number of bands, including Hetero. Who won the Euro Rock competition in 2006. He later moved to Ireland, as you do, where he lived for 1 year and began to write solo material. The song came 22nd in the final on 17 points. I'll have to bring it up because every time I see him, I just think of Liam Spencer from Bold and the Beautiful. I'm sorry, he's got a Scott Clifton vibe.
Bold and the Beautiful reference, tick.
Yeah, well, I've got to get it in. You know, it's our last country. I've got to get another Bold reference in. Come on now. The official clip looks like it's been filmed on a shoestring budget.
Oh, yeah.
Probably in someone's bedroom, I would say. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of finger painting.
Yes.
Yes. He's in two different outfits. He's sort of gone cash and then in a suit, and he's kind of singing to himself on one side of the camera and then to the other. And then there's a bit of split screen and then there's a woman. And then we've got singing with our backs to the camera. I'm sure it means something very deep and meaningful, but no. It was very strange. And I'm sure Mark will want to watch this because he's been telling me that he's been listening to all of our back catalogue. And now he started to actually go and look at all of the clips because we talk about them and then that gets a little bit of interest. So, yes, Mark, you should look this one up. The stage performance is a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, it is actually.
We've got some kind of purple lights, which is very nice, and we liked the 2013 stage. It was almost intimate in a way, but not so intimate that it was tiny. It was quite a nice-looking stage.
Yeah.
He's in a leather jacket and white shirt. It's very Greece.
It is.
It is a bit Greece.
But did you notice what was on his wrist?
I did.
Very clever.
Lithuanian flag.
Yes.
Very clever. And he's joined by four backup singers. not a lot happens. I expected something more to happen with the shoes.
Yeah, it was all these focus on the shoes, but yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it would have been nice to kind of have something, maybe a love shoe and a pain shoe, but I don't know. I remember the first time I heard this song, I was like, I expected him to sing one is called love and the other is hate, but of course it's pain.
Yeah.
And that would always trip me up when I was first listening to it back in 2013. So, yeah, still stands the test of time, and it's made our podcast.
Yeah, speaking of shoes, I alluded to this at the start of the podcast. We had very sore feet.
Oh, extremely. Well, I didn't have sore feet. I had a sore bottom.
But there was a lot of love and pain in yesterday's
events. There was. We did a scavenger hunt.
With our friends Dale and Mikey from Aussie Vision.
Yes, and wonderful Stephen organised the thing, and it was for charity, and it was great, and we came second last, and we didn't care. But yeah, you did a lot of walking, and I did a lot of mobility scooting. But it was good. We didn't get burnt, which was nice.
No. But once again, Dale and Mikey, winners.
Well, we are the winners of Aussie the scavenger Vision. Hunt. That's their third year in a row.
I know.
Look, listeners, if you don't listen to Aussie Vision, you should. They'll be back soon. They're just having a bit of a rest before national finals start up again. So, yeah, and they do nearly daily podcasts when that happens.
Yeah, we'll leave that to them. Yeah,
no, thank you. We do enough. Thanks. Yeah. Speaking of enough.
Yes.
Okay, so a lot of our previous podcasts, we have talked about Lithuania.
Because,
of course, they're intertwined with a lot of their neighbours.
Yes.
So how did you find this history when you were trying to price it down so it's not this gigantic thing?
Well, thinking that it's, I guess, a smaller Baltic country, initially you would think, history's probably not much. But as you said, Lithuania has touched a lot of the countries we've spoken about. So their history's quite significant.
They've touched the other countries?
Yes.
Is that allowed?
I'll have to check the EBU rules. I don't know.
Yeah, don't ask Ewan Alessand. He's having a break in this episode. No. So just let him rest. All right, so strap yourselves in, listeners. The history of Lithuania.
The Indo-Europeans, who arrived in the 3rd to 2nd millennium BC, mixed with the local population to form various Baltic tribes. These tribes did not maintain close cultural or political contacts with the Roman Empire, but they did maintain trade contacts. Fast forward to the 9th to 11th centuries, these Baltic tribes from the coastal region of modern-day Lithuania were subjected to raids by the Vikings, and the kings of Denmark collected tribute at times. During the 10th to 11th centuries, Lithuanian territories were among the lands paying tribute to Kievan Rus. Now, I think we mentioned the Kievan Rus, well, probably in our Ukraine episode.
Well, yeah.
Yes. As well as Yaroslav the Wise.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yaroslav the Wise.
Okay.
Who was among the Ruthenian rulers who invaded Lithuania.
That wasn't wise.
No. From the mid-12th century, it was the Lithuanians who were invading Ruthenian territories. See, they got their
revenge. Yeah, it's fair enough, yeah.
From the late 12th century, an organised Lithuanian military force existed. It was used for external raids, plundering, and the gathering of slaves. Such military activities fostered social differentiation and triggered a struggle for power in Lithuania. It was one of those countries that was, you know, everyone wanted a piece.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's fair. It looks very pretty.
Yeah. This initiated the formation of early statehood, from which the Grand Duchy of Lithuania developed. We all know them.
Yep.
Initially inhabited by fragmented Baltic tribes, in the 1230s, the Lithuanian lands were united by Mindaugas, who was crowned as King of Lithuania in 1253. After his assassination in 1263, pagan Lithuania was a target of the Christian Crusades of the Teutonic Knights and the Livonian Order. Despite the devastating century-long struggle with the orders, the Grand Duchy of Lithuania expanded rapidly, overtaking former Slavic principalities of Kievan Rus. By the end of the 14th century, Lithuania was one of the largest countries in Europe and included present-day Belarus, Ukraine, and parts of Poland and Russia. The geopolitical situation between the West and the East determined the multicultural and multi-confessional character of the Grand Duchy of Lithuania. In 1385, the Grand Duke, Jogaila, accepted Poland's offer to become its king. Jogaila embarked on gradual Christianization of Lithuania and established a personal union between Poland and Lithuania. After two civil wars, Vytautas the Great became the Grand Duke of Lithuania in 1392. During his reign, Lithuania reached the peak of its territorial expansion, centralization of the state began, and the Lithuanian nobility became increasingly prominent in state politics. After the deaths of Jogaila and Vytautas, the Lithuanian nobility attempted to break the union between Poland and Lithuania, independently selecting Grand Dukes from the Jagiellon dynasty. But at the end of the 15th century, Lithuania was forced to seek a closer alliance with Poland when the growing power of the Grand Duchy of Moscow threatened Lithuania's Russian principalities and sparked the Muscovite-Lithuanian Wars and the Livonian War.
The Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth was created in 1569. As a member of the Commonwealth, Lithuania retained its institutions, including a separate army, currency, and statutory laws. Eventually, polonization affected all aspects of Lithuanian life, politics, language, culture, and national identity. From the mid-16th to the mid-17th centuries, culture, arts, and education flourished, fueled by the Renaissance and the Protestant Reformation. The Commonwealth reached its golden age in the early 17th century. Its powerful parliament was dominated by nobles who were reluctant to get involved in the 30 Years' War. This neutrality spared the country from the ravages of political-religious conflict that devastated most of contemporary Europe. The Commonwealth held its own against Sweden, the Tsardom of Russia, and the vassals of the Ottoman Empire. They're back, Mike. Even launched successful expansionist offences against its neighbours. For the first time in its history, Lithuanian capital Vilnius was taken by a foreign army, Russia, in 1655. Russian occupation of the Grand Duchy of Lithuania lasted until 1661. Many artifacts and cultural heritage were either lost or looted. Significant parts of the state archive collected since the 13th century were lost, and the rest was moved out of the country. During the Northern Wars of 1655 to 1661, the Lithuanian territory and economy were devastated by the Swedish army. Almost all territory of the Grand Duchy of Lithuania was occupied by Swedish and Russian armies. Before it could fully recover, Lithuania was ravaged by the Great Northern War, not to be confused with the Great Northern Hotel. From 1700 to 1721, the war, a plague, and a famine caused the death of approximately 40% of the country's population. Foreign powers, especially Russia, became dominant in the domestic politics of the Commonwealth. The Constitution of the 3rd of May 1791 was adopted by the Parliament of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth trying to save the state. The legislation was redesigned to redress the Commonwealth's political defects due to the system of the Golden Liberties, also known as the Nobles' Democracy, which conferred disproportionate rights on the nobility and over time had corrupted politics. The Constitution sought to supplant the prevailing anarchy fostered by some of the country's magnates with a more democratic constitutional monarchy. It introduced elements of political equality between townspeople and nobility and placed the peasants under the protection of the government, thus mitigating the worst abuses of serfdom. Eventually, the Commonwealth was partitioned in 1772, 1792, and 1795 by the Russian Empire, Prussia, and Habsburg Austria.
Wind Machine Podcast.
The largest area of Lithuanian territory became part of the Russian Empire. After unsuccessful uprisings in 1831 and 1863, the Tsarist authorities implemented a number of Russification policies. They banned the Lithuanian press, closed cultural and educational institutions, and made Lithuania part of a new administrative region called Northwestern Krai. The Russification failed owing to an extensive network of book smugglers and secret Lithuanian homeschooling. And now we fast forward to the 20th century. As a result of the Great Retreat during World War I, Germany occupied the entire territory of Lithuania and Courland by the end of 1915. A new administrative entity, Oberost, was established. Lithuanians lost all political rights they had gained. Personal freedom was restricted, and at the beginning, the Lithuanian press was banned again. However, the Lithuanian Intelligista tried to take advantage of the existing geopolitical situation and began to look for opportunities to restore Lithuania's independence. Around mid to late September 1917, the Vilnius Conference elected the 20-member Council of Lithuania. The Council adopted the Act of Independence of Lithuania on the 16th of February 1918, which proclaimed the restoration of the independent state of Lithuania, governed by democratic principles, with Vilnius as its capital. On the 20th of March 1939, after years of rising tensions, Lithuania was handed an ultimatum by Nazi Germany demanding that they relinquish the Klaipėda region. 2 days later, the Lithuanian government accepted the ultimatum. When Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union concluded the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, which is one of my favourite pacts, Lithuania was initially assigned to the German sphere of influence, but later was transferred to the Soviet sphere. At the outbreak of World War II, Lithuania declared neutrality. In October 1939, Lithuania was forced to sign the Soviet-Lithuanian Mutual Assistance Treaty. 5 Soviet military bases with 20,000 troops were established in Lithuania in exchange for Vilnius that the Soviets captured from Poland. Delayed by the Winter War with Finland, the Soviets issued an ultimatum to Lithuania on the 14th of June 1940. They demanded to replace the Lithuanian government and to allow the Red Army into the country. The government decided that with Soviet bases already in Lithuania, armed resistance was impossible and accepted the ultimatum. The next day, identical ultimatums were presented to Latvia and Estonia. The Baltic states were occupied. The Soviets followed semi-constitutional procedures for transforming the independent countries into Soviet republics and incorporating them into the Soviet Union. Now you can see why the Baltic states do not like Russia very much.
Yeah.
And why Russia still wants to try and get them back.
Mm-hmm.
Lithuania was rapidly Sovietized. Political parties and various organizations, except of course the Communist Party of Lithuania, were outlawed. Some 12,000 people were arrested and imprisoned in gulags as enemies of the people. Larger private property was nationalized. Lithuanian litis was exchanged to Soviet ruble. Farm taxes were increased by 50 to 200%.
Whoa.
And the Lithuanian army was transformed into the 29th Rifle Corps of the Red Army.
By December 1st, 1941, over 120,000 Lithuanian Jews, or 91 to 95% of Lithuania's pre-war Jewish community, had been killed. Thousands of Lithuanian families risked their lives protecting Jews from the Holocaust. A new Nazi occupation had begun. Nationalized assets were not returned to the residents. Some of them were forced to fight for Nazi Germany or were taken to German territories as forced laborers. After the retreat of the German armed forces, the Soviets re-established their control of Lithuania in July to October 1944. The massive deportations to Siberia were resumed and lasted until the death of Stalin in 1953. all Lithuanian national symbols were banned. Under the pretext of Lithuania's economic recovery, the Moscow authorities encouraged the immigration of workers and other specialists to Lithuania with the intention to further integrate Lithuania into the Soviet Union and to develop the country's industry. At the same time, Lithuanians were lured to work in the USSR by promising them all the privileges of settling in a new place. The second Soviet occupation was accompanied by the guerrilla warfare of the Lithuanian population, which took place between 1944 to 1953. It sought to restore an independent state of Lithuania to consolidate democracy by destroying communism in the country, returning national values and freedom of religion. Despite the fact that the guerrilla warfare did not achieve its goal of liberating Lithuania, the armed resistance de facto demonstrated that Lithuania did not voluntarily join the USSR, and it also legitimized the will of the people of Lithuania to be independent. The Helsinki Group, which was founded in Lithuania after the International Conference in Helsinki, informed the Western world about the situation in Soviet Lithuania and violations of human rights. On the 11th of March 1990, the Supreme Council announced the restoration of Lithuania's independence. After a refusal to revocate the act, the Soviet forces stormed the parliamentary palace, while Lithuanians irresistibly defended their democratically elected council. The act was the first such declaration the USSR and later served as a model inspiration for other Soviet republics and strongly influenced the dissolution of the USSR. People from all over Lithuania flooded to Vilnius to defend their legitimately selected Supreme Council of the Republic of Lithuania and independence. Shortly after, in February 1991, Iceland became the first country to recognise the independence of Lithuania. Good on you, Iceland! On the 17th of September 1991, Lithuania was admitted to the United Nations. On the 25th of October 1992, the citizens of Lithuania voted in the referendum to adopt the current constitution. On the 14th of February 1993, during the direct general elections, Adrilis Lithuanian.
Algirdas Brazukas, something like that.
That sounds really good, and I'm not going to copy that, became the first president after the restoration of independence of Lithuania. On the 31st of August 1993, the last units of the Soviet army left the territory of Lithuania. Bye, Felicia.
Wind Machine Podcast.
So that was the last history lesson for this season of the Wind Machine Podcast.
Oh, season two will have history in it.
Maybe. Maybe. So, last bit of religion. According to the 2011 census, 77.2% of residents of Lithuania were Catholics. Catholicism has been the main religion since the official Christianization of Lithuania in 1387. The Catholic Church was persecuted by the Russian Empire as part of the Russification policies and by the Soviet Union as part of the overall anti-religious campaigns. During the Soviet era, some priests actively led the resistance against the communist regime, as symbolised by the Hill of Crosses and exemplified by the Chronicle of the Catholic Church in Lithuania. 4.1% of the population are Eastern Orthodox, mainly among the Russian minority. Protestants are at 0.8%, of which 0.6% are Lutheran and the rest are Reformed. The Reformation did not impact Lithuania to a great extent as seen in East Prussia, Estonia or Latvia. The historical communities of Lipka Tatars maintain Islam as their religion. Lithuania was historically home to a significant Jewish community and was an important centre of Jewish scholarship and culture from the 18th century until the eve of World War II, and we know what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
In modern times, the Lithuanian Jewish community has numbered around about 4,000, and that was at the end of 2009. Ramuva, the neo-pagan revival of the ancient religious practices, has gained popularity over the years. Ramuva claims to continue living pagan traditions which survived in folklore and customs. According to a 2001 census, there were 1,270 people of Baltic faith in Lithuania. That number jumped to just over 5,000 in the 2011 census.
Ooh, it's gone up. Most of our stats have gone down.
Hmm.
Interesting. Speaking of interesting, I like short shorts.
I like short shorts.
I can't wear them, but I appreciate them. From 2010, here's Eastern European Funk by Inculto.
Give us a chance, cause we're all victims of circumstance. We've had it pretty tough, but that's okay, we like it rough. We'll settle the score, survive the rest into one war.
Is a Lithuanian music group, and if you Google them, there's a photo of the band with Charlene Wright, who is the former president of OGAE Australia. I love that. It's like looking for photos. Oh, hi Charlene. She's obviously the sixth member of the band. She didn't tell us. It has the following members. Okay, now wait for it. I've tried my best. All right, ready? Colombian-born Lithuanian Gurgis Didžiulis Aurelis Morilenkis Sergei Makedon. That one seems quite easy. Givaris Uninski and Larinas Lape. I made it. It's as close as I'm going to get. In their first Eurovision attempt, the band came second to LT United in the Lithuanian national final of 2006 with their song Welcome to Lithuania. In March 2010, Inculto won the Lithuanian national final to represent Lithuania in 2010. The band announced that they would split in January 2011 via a statement on Facebook, as you do. The song came 12th in the semi-final on 44 points.
12th in the semi after their performance.
I know.
How rude.
Before we get to the Eurovision stage, let's talk a little bit about the official clip. We're in a small apartment. Everyone's in different rooms. Then we're sort of travelling around the city, and then we cut back to the lounge room, and then there's a cameo of the bald guy from LT United.
He is the winner of the clip.
He is the winner of the clip. Still doing that dancing, by the way. Yeah. They are wearing the tartan pants in the official clip, and thankfully the tartan pants are used again on the Eurovision stage. They've also got some white shorts and some ties. They start sort of a bit kind of a cappella at the start. And then this random sixth person runs out and gives them plastic instruments. That's fun.
Yeah.
And then there's the reveal of the disco shorts.
Yes, which has become quite a popular Eurovision cosplay.
Oh, definitely. If you've got the legs for it, I'd say do it.
Yeah, not me.
No, I don't. No, you've got good legs.
No.
They're quite nice. No, my legs are like tree stumps. I wouldn't do it. Shame this didn't make the final. I thought re-watching it, it was great.
Yeah.
Mind you, we didn't vote in 2010.
So don't blame us.
It's not our fault. Yeah. We probably would have voted for them, I reckon.
Yeah.
So, nothing to do with shorts. I tried to do a segue from disco shorts to geography, climate and politics. But look, we've done so many of these.
Yeah.
You know, I've run out of segues.
Maybe we should ride on a segue.
No.
Different spelling.
Yeah, but I don't have the balance for that either.
No.
I could face plant quite easily. Plop.
You could face plant into the dirt. Hey, that's a link.
Hey,
that's a segue.
Well done.
Very loose. So, here's some geography, climate and politics. Lithuania covers an area of 65,200 square kilometres. It has around 99 kilometres of sandy coastline, only about 38 kilometres of which face the open Baltic Sea. The country's main and largest river, the Nemunas River, and some of its tributaries carry international shipping. Lithuania lies at the edge of the northern European plain. Its landscape was smoothed by the glaciers of the last ice age and is a combination of moderate lowlands and highlands. The terrain features numerous lakes and wetlands, and a mixed forest zone covers over 33% of the country. Lithuania's climate, which ranges between maritime and continental, is relatively mild. Average temperatures on the coast are minus 2.5 degrees in January and 16 degrees in July. In Vilnius, the average temperatures are minus 6 in January and 17 in July. In the past, temperatures have reached as high as 30 or even 35 degrees. Some winters can be very cold. Minus 20 degrees occurs almost every winter. Winter extremes are as much as minus 34 degrees centigrade in coastal areas and minus 43 in the east of Lithuania. Lithuania experienced the drought in 2002, causing forest and peat bog fires. The country suffered along with the rest of northwestern Europe during a heatwave in the summer of 2006.
I wonder how they coped with the heatwave that we had recently. I didn't look that up. That's interesting, isn't it?
No.
Because remember, you know, people were going to stay in like 7-Elevens because it had aircon. Awful. But could you imagine if you're living in a country where aircon means, like, it's basically foreign to have an air conditioner and then you're facing 35 degrees?
Yeah.
Yeah, no thank you.
I'm melting.
Exactly. Since Lithuania declared the restoration of its independence on the 11th of March 1990, it has maintained a strong democratic tradition. It held its first independent general elections on the 25th of October 1992, in which around 57% of voters supported the new constitution. There were intense debates concerning the constitution, particularly the role of president. A separate referendum was held on the 23rd of May 1992 to gauge public opinion on the matter, and 41% of voters supported the restoration of the President of Lithuania. Through compromise, the semi-presidential system was agreed on. The Lithuanian head of state is the president, directly elected for a 5-year term and serving a maximum of 2 terms. The president oversees foreign affairs and national security and is the commander-in-chief of the military. The president also appoints a prime minister, and on the latter's nomination, the rest of the cabinet, as well as a number of top civil servants and judges for all courts. The current Lithuanian head of state, Dalia Grybauskaitė, was elected on the 17th of May 2009, becoming the first female president in the country's history and the second female head of state in the Baltic states after Latvia elected their first female political leader in 1999. Dalia was re-elected for a second term in 2014. The judges of the Constitutional Court serve 9-year terms. They are appointed by the president, the chairman of the parliament, and the chairman of the Supreme Court, each of whom appoint 3 judges. The unicameral Lithuanian parliament has 141 members who are elected to 4-year terms. 71 of the members of parliament are selected in a single member constituency, and the others in a nationwide vote of proportional representation. A party must receive at least 5% of the national vote to be eligible for any of the national seats in parliament.
The Lithuanian Armed Forces is the name for the unified armed forces of Lithuanian Land Force, Lithuanian Air Force, Lithuanian Naval Force, Lithuanian Special Operations Force, and other units, Logistics Command, Training and Doctrine Command, Headquarters, Battalion, and Military Police. Directly subordinated to the Chief of Defence are the Special Operations Forces and the Military Police. The Reserve Forces are under the command of the Lithuanian National Defence Volunteer Forces. The Lithuanian Armed Forces consist of some 15,000 active personnel, which may be supported by Reserve Forces. Compulsory conscription ended in 2008, but was reintroduced in 2015. The Lithuanian Armed Forces currently have deployed personnel on international missions in Afghanistan, Kosovo, Mali, and Somalia. The Lithuanian National Defence Policy aims to guarantee the preservation of the independence and sovereignty of the state, the integrity of its land, territorial waters and airspace, and its constitutional order. Its main strategic goals are to defend the country's interests and to maintain and expand the capabilities of its armed forces so they may contribute to and participate in the missions of NATO and European Union member states.
You know what you should always defend?
What?
Love.
Love, of course.
From 2018, here is When We're Old by Eva Zazemoskaitė.
I know I'll never forget that day the first time we met. We've come a long way since then, and I would do it all again. From your very first smile, I knew that I'd walk a mile. See, it's for real when you know you never wanna let go. Oh, not afraid to grow old if I have your hand to hold.
Eva Zazimos Katie, it's very hard. It's worse than Trigoning. Was born in 1993 and is a Lithuanian singer who represented Lithuania, would you believe it, in the song contest this year. She has previously participated in the Lithuanian national selection for Eurovision in 2013, 14, 16 and 17. She finally got there. At the age of 7, Aiva was sent to a vocal class in the Kuna school where she studied for 8 years. At the music school, Aiva sang in the children's local band. I'm not saying that because it's scary. And played the piano. During this time, she also participated in various competitions and festivals. In 2007, she went to the Junior Eurovision Song Contest as a backing vocalist. When she was 16 years old, she became a member of the Kunas Choir on the TV3 project Clash of the Choirs. Sounds good. In 2015, she received a bachelor's degree in hotel management from the International School of Law and Business. She also looks a little bit like Sherry Appleby. The song came 12th in the final on 181 points. This song makes me cry every single time.
I know.
And watching these clips is worse.
I know, because it's so beautiful.
It's so gorgeous. The official clip, we start off and she's basically playing the piano, but then also in a cafe. Is the piano in the cafe?
Probably.
Okay. The whole clip is watching old people be cute and holding hands. Ooh. Then we end up in the forest. And, of course, her husband features quite prominently in this clip because, of course, she's basically singing it for him.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, it's so cute. On the Eurovision stage, she is in the most amazing pink dress that it would be. It's almost like a prom dress, really, when you think about it. Yeah, it's very flowy. And she's on the floor. You know how we have this floor singing thing that happens? There's this clever use of on-screen graphics that, of course, you would miss if you were in the stadium. But it really does accentuate what the song is about.
It sure does, yeah.
And, of course, in Lisbon, you weren't allowed
LEDs.
Yeah, anything super fancy. So, you know, this is their way of getting around that. She goes up the stairs and then her husband joins her and then I cry again. Oh, my God. I was like, we were watching the clips and I was going, Danny, just keep yourself together, please.
It's so cute.
It's so cute. And she's so sweet. And the fact that she has such a ginormous last name, I know how she feels. Because people look at Trigoning and just, they cannot deal with it at all. This is our last bit for me to say, hey, Mark, did you know this podcast is about Eurovision?
Really?
It is.
Well, I'd better talk about Lithuania in Eurovision. Lithuania has participated in the Eurovision Song Contest 19 times since its debut in 1994, where they finished last, receiving null points.
That's never a good start.
No. Lithuania withdrew from the contest, not returning until 1999. LT United's sixth place in 2006 with the song We Are The Winners is Lithuania's best result in the contest. Okay. The country reached the top 10 for a second time in 2016 when Donny Montel finished ninth.
We haven't played any Donny Montel yet.
No, we haven't.
Mm.
Having been relegated from the 2000 contest, the country returned in 2001 with Scamp and You Got Style, the first Lithuanian song to include English. They received 35 points, placing 13th. However, the following year, Lithuania could only manage to come second last with 12 points. Since the semi-finals were introduced, Lithuania again came last with Laura and the Lovers with the song Little by Little.
Yeah, that's fair.
The following year, the Lithuanian broadcaster LRT sent LT United to the contest with the football chant-like song We Are the Winners. They took Lithuania to the final for the first time since 2002, coming sixth, as we said, in the final with 162 points. Lithuania's best place so far. And a lot of boos.
So many boos! I couldn't believe it when we watched it back and it was like, really?
Well, really, it did seem like it was a piss take.
But we love some piss takes.
Oh yeah, of course we do. But for the people in the stadium, they would be expecting a bit more effort than just We Are the Winners. But it's a good troll song. Anyway,
it is a good troll song.
The following year, Lithuania automatically qualified for the final. However, For Fun, the name of the band, could not replicate LT United's success, coming 21st with only 28 points, 12 of which came from Ireland.
It's random.
Right. In 2008, Gieronimus Milius failed to reach the final, coming 16th of 19 competing nations in the second semi-final.
Sorry, I'm laughing because nomads of the night. It's like, the only way I can explain it, if listeners don't know the song, is when musical theatre goes drastically wrong. Plus, he's got pretty scary hair.
Yeah.
Lithuania threatened to boycott the 2009 contest if Russia continues to showcase power and ignore international law. The statement was made in reaction to Russia's actions in the 2008 South Ossetia War, which, of course, we spoke about in the Russian episode. Culture Minister Jonas Lukas stated that it was too early to discuss a boycott since spontaneous decisions might aggravate the efforts of diplomats and thus made the situation worse. Oops. At the Eurovision Song Contest 2009, Lithuania qualified for the semi-finals at the end of voting and in the final received 23 points, placing 23rd. LRT announced in December 2009 that due to the lack of necessary funds, Lithuania would withdraw from 2010. However, in the event that the necessary funds of 90,000 euros would be found, the broadcaster announced that it would attempt to continue the country's participation. Ultimately, a private company, TEOLT, provided the necessary funding. As of 2018, Lithuania remains the only Baltic country not to win the contest after wins for Estonia in 2001 and Latvia in 2002. However, since the introduction of the semi-final round in 2004, Lithuania has had more finals appearances than any of the Baltic nations, with 9 compared to 6 for both for Estonia and Latvia. Since 2000, Lithuania has performed in English every year with smatterings of Lithuanian, Russian and French. Lithuania usually gets their top points from Latvia, the UK and Ireland and usually give their top points to Latvia, Russia, Ukraine, Georgia and Sweden. I've been waiting for this.
So have I. From 2016, here's I've Been Waiting For This Night by Donny Montell.
Here we are together, you and I, watching lights around us, feel the night. I was living in the dark, try to heal my broken heart. Until now, here we are together, you and I.
I've been waiting for this night. There is nothing I can do that can take my heart from you. Always yours. If only I could stay here by your side, For a thousand years, through a million tears, with a hungry heart, every day apart, I've been waiting for this night. I've been waiting for this night. When I see your smile and your beautiful eyes, I get lost in time. Now I know that I've been waiting for this night. I've been waiting for this night.
Donatas Montidas, born 1987, better known by his stage name Donny Montel, is a Lithuanian singer-songwriter who represented Lithuania at the Eurovision Song Contest in 2012 and 2016. His mother was a gymnast and his father was a drummer of a hard rock group. Donny's older sister is a professional dancer. His interest in music began at a young age. He started performing publicly at age 6, when his vocal teacher let him participate in the contest for young singers, The Song of the Songs. As a child, Donny was highly influenced by artists such as Michael Jackson and rock band Queen, and would often impersonate these artists from a young age. The song I've Been Waiting For This Night came 9th in the final on 200 points.
You can't half see the Michael Jackson thing, can you?
Oh, definitely.
You reckon, like, you know, just the way the guy moves. Now, of course, we had two Donny songs and we decided that we liked this one more.
Yes.
That was all it was. Yep. There's nothing wrong with, you know, the other one, but we just decided, no. There were enough Lithuanian songs where we didn't have to do a double up of Donny.
Yep.
The official clip, he's walking the streets at night. He sees a lady having a cigarette. He follows her into a disco. Then they kind of dance for a bit and then they end up in the street and they have their own sort of party of two. It's very nice.
Oh.
Then they get a bit frisky beside the water and he takes off her jacket and reveals that she has the song title written on her arm.
Whoa.
I know. The Eurovision stage, we've gotten rid of the woman. Sorry. White jacket. Black top, black pants, groovy sneakers. There's a lot of blue staging and a lot of kind of twinkly. Do you remember on in 2016 we had LEDs in the floor? So that meant that you could sort of run and jump and it would follow you. That was really cool. Then the jacket comes off and there's an amazing flip that goes through a whole heap of smoke machine. And then Donny forgets the words. Oops. But look, it was enough to get him 9th, so it was fine.
Yeah.
I think it was a really solid performance. The guy can sing.
Oh, of course.
You know, and he's quite hypnotising. You know what? Something reminds me when I look at Donny Montel.
Mm.
Joey McIntyre from New Kids on the Block.
Yes.
See? I'm not crazy.
Oh, my, yes.
Yes. Wonder if he liked New Kids on the Block. I wonder if New Kids on the Block was big in Lithuania.
Possibly.
Mm. He's the right age for New Kids, too. He's only 10 years younger than us.
Yeah.
I wasn't into New Kids, but, hey, you know, whatever. We've come to the end.
The end. No more countries.
Oh, no more countries.
But
yes. The next episode will be part one of a two-part special where we choose songs that could have made our podcast if the Yoda Beanie of Doom drew the country later than it did.
So we're essentially covering 2017 and 2018 songs.
We are. And I think a smattering of 2016? No. Oh, that's right. We started after 2016. Look, it's so long ago. I can't believe this season has taken us 2 and a bit years. So it'll be very interesting. How many have we got on the shortlist?
22.
Right, we've got to get that down to 10. Yep. Okay. Yep. We've actually gone for quite some different songs. Like, there's some that we agree on,
yep.
But there's other ones where I've gone, yep, and you've gone, yep. So
it's going to be a challenge.
It's going to be a challenge. I guess legal announcement, which we still will be doing.
Of course.
So that's okay.
We at Wind Machine Podcast have taken every legal step allowed to us to present this podcast with a current APRA license, and we claim fair use for the music played. We are not affiliated with the EBU, its partners, or SBS. We are just fans.
I feel a little bit like Phil from The Amazing Race, you know, when the last person runs to the mat and he does that whole, so many countries and so many days and so many did it. That's how I feel. This has been an amazing race.
It's been a marathon.
It has been a marathon, and we've stuck with it. Go us.
Yay.
Yay. You can follow me on Twitter, Danny Treg, so DanieTreg.
And you can follow me on Twitter if you want. It's Mark Perkins VO.
You can follow the podcast Twitter account, which is at WinMachinePod.
Like us on Facebook.
Also like us on Instagram.
Oh, yes, we do have that in YouTube. And the various podcasty apps like TuneIn, Podbean, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and now Spotify.
Yes, we finally made it to Spotify. Thank goodness for that. You can also take a look at our website, which also has every single episode we've ever done archived. So if you can't find a particular country on whatever app you're using, just go to the website. You can find it there, which is windmachinepodcast.com. So we've done it. I need a cup of tea. I don't know about you.
I need a stiff drink.
Thank you to all of our listeners who have hung with us and come in bits and bobs, or come in late, or started early, or whatever. We really do appreciate that you've come on this journey with us, but we haven't finished. We still have 3 episodes left of season 1.
So,
until the next episode, which is episode 48, and I think we've called it the Coulda, Shoulda, Wouldas part 1.
Coulda, Shoulda, Wouldas. Yep.
Until then, be good listeners, and we will be back soon.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Moon, I'll follow you in darkness. It seems we're nomads in the night. Your girl turns me into the heart. Shining eyes.